Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a special AIC edition of the Tower Dive podcast. We are intermittently covering the biggest tournament in Arena of Valor history. And to do that, I'm joined by the head writer of SamuraiGamers.com, D2.
Yellow. How's it going, DJ?
Not bad. Over the last 2 weeks, things were a little bit rough for me, though, because I was getting up repeatedly at around 10 p.m. my time and staying up until around 4 a.m. my time, which is great. Yes. That's how sleep schedules should work. In order to cast the Arena of Valor International Championship.
You're a true gamer now, TJ.
Unfortunately, my in-game ranking has not gone up with my sleep deprivation. But it's all right, it balanced out, because I got to watch some absolutely incredible Arena of Valor over the course of the first two stages of the AIC. This is also why our production of these podcasts has been a lot stuttery during this period, because we've both been a little bit extra busy. We'll dedicate this entire episode, basically, towards the AIC, because it is the biggest thing happening in Arena of Valor right now, and to be frank, there's so much to talk about, given that we missed a week.
And there's also very little going on the meta, because both Garena and Tencent are really putting everything into the AIC, so the meta really hasn't changed since the last time we spoke. Other than pro meta, I suppose.
That pro meta has been evolving. Let's start by discussing stage one of the AIC. There were two group stages, the first of which occurred in Vietnam, and we did lose a few teams there, but I took away some interesting things. Number one, Vietnam is way more into Arena of Valor than I had previously thought.
Are you talking about the stage production, or are you talking about their top three teams all making it to the bracket draw? Spoilers.
Both of the above. Their top three teams all did well. Everyone there was psyched. They had Taiko drummers, and they had an Arena of Valor Vietnam rap song, which will never be topped.
Yeah, Vietnam, they are really into the game. It shows by not just their performance, but also the fact that they have their own really big league there, the AOG, Arena of Glory, which is about, I think, $80,000 league. And all their teams showed out in this tournament.
And the We Are Vietnam AIC rap song will be replacing our normal closing music this episode. Question mark? You're welcome, actually, is the statement I'm taking there.
I am fully on board with that. It is so awesome.
It started playing like during one of the breaks. And I was like, why does this exist? Why is it good? Why is this good? And I'm like, not a music guy, but I'm happy that exists. Then more gameplay-focused news. We did, of course, see, oh my god, the Chinese team for the first time there, and they were kind of a dark horse for us going into the tournament. Both of us were speculating about how good they'd be. To me, they were 8 times more terrifying than I thought they would be during Stage 1.
Yeah, like you mentioned, they were a big question mark, because I don't think they had any Arena of Valor experience going in. It was all King of Glory, which is the Chinese version of the game, the kind of older version, I would say. And they have a really big esports team with that game, with the KPL, and they actually made a branch of it in the Korean KPL. So they actually qualified for the AIC by winning a KOG tournament amongst 7 other Chinese teams. And there were just a big question mark. How well would they be able to adapt? They actually just use a lot of tried and true methods that they had from KOG, using the same heroes that they had from KOG, like Raz, Kresht, Malok, all that kind of stuff. Fun fact, Lubu on KOG is actually Malok. He has the same abilities. It's really weird to see Lubu actually act like a Malok. It kind of throws you off for a moment, but Yeah, Oh My God, look really good. I think part of the reason why they look so good is because people didn't realize what heroes they were capable of using. And then once they got to stage two, the band came in and Overclockers went from getting defeated by Oh My God to banning the exact correct heroes to throw them off. And spoilers, they were able to
And
throw them out of the tournament stage two.
it was their first game of Stage 2 that kind of showed what you were talking about. They looked incredibly weak versus Overclockers the second time around because they seemed to have been figured out, and I think it was the fact that they played them twice in a row over the course of the two stages. They became aware of where Oh My God's weaknesses were.
Yeah, I was a bit worried about the whole setup as far as the teams playing each other twice for the same period. I figured, well, we're going to see the same results, more and more. And that actually didn't end up being the case because Overclockers were able to completely flip the script from group stage one to group stage two and take them out with some Tauro play that I know you were
Oh my
absolutely
goodness.
flabbergasted by.
Okay, I felt a little bit silly on the broadcast because that Tauro, we should give context, the game that Oh My God dropped that knocked them out of stage two versus Overclockers, they lost to a Tauro. Was that as out of nowhere for you as it was for me?
Sometimes teams do strange things. I've seen Toro before. I've seen him win before, but when he did win, it was against like a double support where the other team didn't know what was going on and just got Jedi mind tricked into a terrible draft. This was in the RPL. I don't think the Toro did anything in that game, to be honest. I think he could have replaced Toro with a better support and they would have done even better. I think they demolished them in game one and it would have been a similar showing in game two, but things were closer than they should have been because of the Tauro pick, in my opinion.
I don't know. There were like two moments where Tauro actually did something, and
Well, he's.
it was some of the most upsetting moments of my entire Arena of Valor casting career, because I was saying words like, "This Tauro finding a lot of value in the front line," and
He's still
then
a
the
hero with abilities. That's basically what it is. Like,
really?
it wasn't 4v5, it
I
was
only play on the NA server
4.835.
where he's not out, so literally you're wrong.
The game developers are too embarrassed to release Tauro at this point on NA. It's like, hey, new hero. Oh, I'm sorry, guys. But no, Tauro is actually a hero with abilities, if you didn't know, but I literally any hero with abilities would have been fine for Overclockers, as you saw, because they were able to win. And again, if as long as they supported anything, it would have been fine for them.
Toro, more like poor. Oh, substitute for any other support?
Pretty much. On the broadcast, you guys kept talking about how he was so tanky. It's like, yeah, he was so tanky because he was standing there because he self-stunned himself. And taking a lot of damage because he was an obvious target that they shot at. That said, I guess there is value
I
in
do think, oh
Jedi
my
mind
God,
tricking the.
yeah. I do think, oh my God, didn't know about Toro's passive. Because Toro's passive, obviously, I shouldn't say obviously, because there's an entire region that's never seen him. Toro's passive reduces damage taken whilst he's using an ability, and he has some really long ability animations. It takes him, like, a while to do anything. He has to, like, think about his day, plan out his day, get an itinerary set up, send it to his buddy on Google Calendar. His buddy checks the time zone, sends it back. They both mark it down on their calendars. Then he goes ahead and writes it in his diary just to be sure. And then he goes ahead and executes that plan. And it takes him so long. He's useless. But if the other team doesn't know that you are really hard to kill while you're casting an ability, and you just run and cast an ability at them, I think what happened was, oh my God, we're repeatedly spending a lot of their big damage into Tauro with that damage reduction applied.
So you're saying he has pseudo Dark Dominion ability equipped to him
Yes,
playing against certain
but only
people.
against people that literally don't play the game.
Especially his second ability, because he stands there and he stops for a moment, he self-stuns himself, and then he roars, literally roars out. He does a tiny, tiny bit of damage to people, and it's an objectively terrible ability. But if you can somehow force your opponents to attack you, then you've effectively cast Arctivian. So I suppose that's a good ability sometimes, when you can just trick your opponents into thinking it's something that does stuff.
It is kind of interesting, though, if we shift over to the team that they beat. Oh my god, did perform really, really well when they were playing on characters they knew. They clearly had very high-level team play and map control, and I'll be interested to see what future teams out of the KPL and future teams out of the Korean King of Glory, King Pro, or KK... Oh, never mind.
Oh, very close to that.
Can do in Western competition. Let's move on, and I want to, before we get into the Western teams, because I do have plenty of things to say there, I want to talk about two other things that are connected to this narrative. One, Bizarre Gaming. The top team out of the RPL are not looking good.
Yeah, they were kind of up and down in the RPL as well. I just figured that they really hit a groove in the playoffs of the RPL and knocked out both ITZD Bacon and Alpha Red in convincing fashion. So I felt like they were looking really good going into the playoffs. I'm not sure the exact ages of their members. They all seem very, very young. So perhaps that's where some of the inconsistency comes in. But I feel like if they do hit their groove once again in the playoff stages, then they will be terrifying to behold. But they are going against Alpha Red, their rivals, in the first round, so that could be problematic for them.
And on the opposite side of that, Toyota Diamond Cobra, my favorite team name, have been looking terrifying. They have not looked mortal in any game they played.
So TDC looked really good. They've actually garnered a bunch of fans randomly out of nowhere. People messaged me on Twitter saying, like, do you think TDC is going to win at all? But they did drop the series against Team Flash, which just shows that they have weaknesses. I think they looked better than Team Flash, even though they lost, which is weird to say. But I think that J-Team is just too much. They're too put together. They're not going to make stupid mistakes against TDC. J-Team is basically, their greatest strength is that there's their consistency. It's also the greatest weakness as well, because they can't really reach the levels of like an AHQ or, you know, some of the better teams that can just, you know, hit 11 out of a 1 to 10 scale. So, but I think J-Team's not going to beat themselves, and I think that J-Team's actually going to beat TDC. And sorry for the TDC fans out there who are predicting them to win it all.
But this TDC roster has like hit a whole nother level. Get Search has accomplished some of the most impressive jungle play of any AOV player, like, ever. He's made Kricknack look broken to a degree that I know he isn't, but he's playing melees just so well.
Yeah, I think Kricknack is almost... He's kind of hit the other side of the fence, right? Where people thought he was... People kind of overrated him a bit, and then... In the pros, people were shutting down Kricknack a lot, and part of that was because people weren't playing Kricknack the greatest. But now he's hit a point where I think he might be a little bit underrated, and the fact that you see people like Get Search, you see people like First One playing him at such a high level, I think that people are going to reevaluate him and see him as the monster that he possibly is. But TDC, again, I kept a lot of the RPL. They were unimpressive the entire time in the RPL, and then it's just funny to me how they made the exact three correct roster changes. They kept Mr. Suns and Summer, who are looking great. They didn't look so great when I saw them last time, but they are looking great now. And that is that has to be commended. Just the management of that team, just knowing who to keep and who to get rid of, because obviously when you do something like finish seventh in a league out of eight teams, it's very tempting to just get rid of everything, just like full start, full blow up, but they kept the right players.
Another team that is considered one of the teams that kept the right players from a disappointing first season and came back to win the second season is Nova Esports Europe. They, of course, kept Grizzly Q and iFlex from their Season 1 roster and augmented it with the Team Noob roster. They were unbeatable this season until the late season, when they almost lost their control of the European Valor Series to Bubble Team. Once they got here to the AIC, they looked like an entirely different roster. Vex and Poseidon still showed up, but they were the only two to do so.
I still feel like the Vex's hero pool, I know it's Vex and he can probably play anyone, at least to a certain degree, but I feel like the heroes that he wasn't able to play to a ridiculous standard, or at least to his standards, kind of held him back a little bit and prevented them from going with true counters to the opponent's Jess. Because throughout the Europe playoffs and even in some of the games that we saw in the AAC, I felt like their manager, Jay Jesse, was doing a really good job of drafting. And I think they were handcuffed a little bit by some of the heroes that they're unable to play.
Grizzly Q stood out to me as an absence. Because it's now been a streak. He didn't really show up at the Valor Series finals, but that was fine because the rest of his team was still on point. Then he didn't show up at all at the AIC, and they did need him.
Yeah, having that really strong support play is crucial if you're going to make anything happen. And the funny thing is, we always talk about, you know, the mid laner or the jungler, but a lot of the time it's the support who's making everything happen. Something that comes to mind is something like KSSA, mm-hmm. you know, combining perfectly in order to allow his team to get those picks and all stages of the game. And it's something you look at the end of the game and you don't see the support with a high score. You see all the damage on this hero or that hero, but you know who made everything happen.
I'd like to touch on Tarmogoyf as well. They dropped out during group stage 1 and it wasn't an ideal performance from them.
They nearly beat Overclockers. It was kind of close.
They did have a good game against Overclockers, and they did, I feel, show potential.
I think a lot of it was nerves, because mm-hmm. they're representing 3 countries when they go in there, and they did such a poor job at the AWC that they felt like they probably needed to show out a bit better. And I think they did show out better than what we saw at the AWC, including the AWC boot camp, where the actual Philippine roster was from Clutch Guild was at the boot camp. So I think they did a bit better. I think there are some jitters. I think they could have maybe beat Overclockers if they played their best, which would have been an interesting situation because Overclockers ended up actually going to the single elimination round of 8, but just didn't have quite enough there. They had that one game where they looked really good with what I like to call an AHQ style draft, where it was just all ranged heroes and it was just on the tips of your toes, the edge of your seat, where any sort of mistake would have been the downfall for them, but that aggression was able to get them one game.
They did have a sister team, I feel, in Nova LATAM, who also had a lot of pressure, also had an AWC performance they may have felt they needed to redeem, and they also didn't really make it happen. Despite some really promising looks against multiple teams, they made every game they played amazingly close, and they weren't quite able to convert any of them.
I felt like their preparation was very solid. Every time they went into the game, they were step by step with their opposing team, you know, 5 minutes into the game, and then things started to fall apart. It's honestly just a matter of getting better. I don't want to come on the podcast and say just get good Latin America, but the preparation was great. They did everything right until 5 minutes of the game. Then after that, it was just execution. It was just micro play, macro play, and just basically getting outplayed by their opponents after five minutes passed.
And we did see that repeatedly. They did get shut down despite promising early games and 1 or 2 games, particularly their second series, where I genuinely thought they were about to take the game. And then it felt like, as you said, things unraveled in the late game. Teams that were capable of adapting and surviving long, as most of these international teams are, were just able to outlast, perhaps, the Nova Latam roster. The final...
One last thought. I actually had a tweet talking about Flash Wolves versus Nova Esports Latam. And it's funny because I didn't know whether Flash Wolves was a good matchup for Nova or a bad matchup for them, because Flash Wolves is not a team that will punish you in the macro game, because they're not, their strength isn't in the macro. Their strength is the micro when they just take team fights. So they never actually punished Nova for, you know, Nova not really rotating properly and getting the macro that they needed to get. But at the same time, if they're going to keep taking team fights with Flash Wolves, you're eventually not going to come out on top against Flash Wolves. Might be literally the best team in the world at that.
And we did see that over the course of the entire AIC. The final team, the final Western hope, was Allegiance. And they did play well, but again, we did see them fall into the Stage 2 groups. They went down somewhat ignobly, especially in their final game of their final series. And I wanted to highlight, before we get into what went wrong, because I do think there's a lot of fun things to unpack there, I want to highlight one player in particular, Sleepy, who really stood up on this world stage. Things were not going well. They had to play with multiple subs. He had a bad regular season, and Sleepy came into these finals, came into the AIC, and looked really damn good all playoff long.
Yeah, he's just so mechanically solid that at some point he's going to show out. I do want to commend the North American team for beating Saudara Esports from Indonesia. Saudara, they not only defeated I think it was Evos, who was the team that went to the AWC, but they also defeated, it was like GGWP. And that was the 6-0 team in their league, the $180,000 league in Indonesia. And I was thinking going in, you know, they demolished these two teams. Perhaps they have something to show here, especially because Indonesia is another one of those regions that really wants to show how good they are on the esports scene. And Allegiance shut them down. So at least that's something in Allegiance's, that's one feather in Allegiance's hat.
But it's definitely not a hat with a lot of feathers, because a lot of other things went wrong. It felt like their two sidelines were never really on the same page. MTS, the mechanical god, didn't really have very many opportunities to show that off, because he kept playing isolated in the bot lane and got ganked a ton and generally seemed uncomfortable in the dragon side role. They brought in AC's hero and had him play the top lane, and he repeatedly got caught out over-aggressive. Both of their side lanes' lack of success felt like a result of the overall team's poor rotations. I hate to bully Rest because he's a great guy, but it never really felt like he or the team he's shot calling for were able to anticipate enemy rotations and back up the side laners when they needed it.
I kind of felt bad for Rest because I know that as the mistakes were happening, he was thinking these are not mistakes that should be happening right now. These are not acceptable mistakes. I knew that in his mind he was thinking, I need to play better, but it was just so hard to do, especially with all the pressure. And especially because when you play against some of these teams, they are like clockwork. They move with just a robotic precision. And it's like playing a boss on a game on like super ridiculous hard difficulty, where one mistake will lose you the game. And that pressure is just there the entire time. And yeah, you have to have not only great micro skills, but also be in the right place at the right time constantly. And if you don't have a team of five that's played together constantly throughout, you know, not only just a season, but for years, as some of these teams have, then you're not gonna come out on top a lot of the time.
Well, where they stumbled and fell in their sideline coordination, they definitely looked great in their jungle coordination. Another ALG player I'd like to highlight is Zane, who came in from Tribe Gaming, slotted into the jungle role, and looked really good in it. That was just an incredible piece of substitution work, and it was a great singular performance that I'm sure he'll carry forward into any future competition, and it should guarantee him a slot on any top NA team.
Yeah, I'm actually glad that it ended up that way, where they got players from Tribe. I think that ended up being for the best. Also, because, you know, you got to wave your American flag proudly without any reservations.
Because that was a full,
full American roster.
The red-blooded Americans did fall, though, and that left us with a completed stage two of groups. This means our bracket draw was completed, and we didn't actually broadcast it on the English feed, so I'll go ahead and read it out now. If you're wondering what games are coming up in the quarterfinals, it will be Team Flash versus Flash Wolves, AHQ versus Overclockers, Bizarre Gaming versus Alpha Red, and J-Team versus Toyota Diamond Cobra.
That looks like a great draw for AHQ. They're in the top half. They've already beaten Flash Wolves. I believe Flash Wolves will beat Team Flash. And then Overclockers were the overachievers who were able to defeat China due to basically locking out the heroes that they were comfortable with. So AHQ looked great. Bottom half of the draw is a bunch of Thai teams, but J-Team might make it out of there anyway. What do you see going on here?
Well, not to get ahead of ourselves, but I think the two outcomes for this tournament are Toyota Diamond Cobra go Super Saiyan or AHQ win. And if TDC have, like, another level beyond Plus Ultra, and it turns out that... Because they're already going beyond what we predicted they would. If they just, like, keep going, then maybe... But they are the only X factor that I can see upsetting AHQ right now.
Okay, I think that you're underestimating Alpha Red and Bizarre Gaming. I think that
I'm maybe underestimating Alpha Red, but Bizarre Gaming has looked rough.
Well, that's why I think you're underestimating them. I think that they are capable of flipping a switch, and I think they will flip the switch.
Well,
because they didn't really need to. Although, I guess they were in danger of falling. Wait, in that weird timed match that they had against, oh my god, were they in danger of finishing
third? They could have been
knocked
out if they'd lost in under 10 minutes.
Huh. That would have been very strange.
It would have.
Oh my goodness. So, Alpha Red and Bizarre Gaming, I think whoever wins that actually has a decent chance against J Team. I think TDC needs to put some stuff together and reassess how they played and the mistakes that caused them to lose to Team Flash. Like, you know, a situation that they should have won. But I don't know. As far as TDC is concerned, them getting second in the group didn't hurt them that much if you think about it, because it was either they play against Flash Wolves if they get first, or they play against J Team if they get second. And there's not a whole lot that separates Flash Wolves and J Team.
I'm
going
to be honest. All of my faith is in TDC right now, because they've been such a fun team to watch.
To be honest, I would not be surprised if we see them in the winners' finals. I just... I don't.
This is what it means to go even further beyond!
Oh my goodness.
I think there's another level to the pinnacle of Japanese car engineering. I think we haven't yet seen what they're capable of. We haven't even smelled what they're capable of yet. Not even a whiff on the downstream air. I can taste it on the wind, but I can't smell it yet. Because human taste buds are like 8 times more sensitive than your nose.
Fantastic. We should mention, by the way, that this, I believe it's true, right? Nothing has changed, that this is single elimination for just the round of 8, and yes, then it goes double elimination for the final 4.
Single elimination for the round of 8. If you get past this, you get your way into a double elim. So I would say this next weekend, the quarterfinals is like the sketchiest of weekends, because there's a lot on the line.
They should just randomly institute a time limit for one of these teams just to bring us back to stage 2.
It was really exciting. I'd do that. My all-time favorite moment from the last weekend was when we had major tech issues day 1. And I'm sitting there with Paul and we're filling and bantering. And I'm like, yeah, so I can see that they're picking up a phone. So I assume that they're just going to replace it and we'll be able to get back into the game. And then this lower third comes in, even on the clean feed, so we can see it and we didn't set it up. And it like flickers and fizzles into existence and it's this really slow, fancy animation. And I'm like, that's going to be a message that tells us what's wrong. And I'm pretty excited for it. And I'm like, yeah, so it seems like we're going to be having, and right as I hit that, it fades in and it reads, tech issues.
Let me tell you exactly what is happening streaming right now. It's tech issues.
That's my favorite moment. But the bracket draw, most excitingly for me, is that TDC versus JT match. But Bizarre Gaming versus Alpha Red is the opportunity for Bizarre Gaming to show that potential you keep insisting they have.
Well, it's also a chance for Alpha Red to redeem themselves against J Team, because they did take a game off J Team. And I feel like with both Bizarre Gaming and Alpha Red, they don't have, you know, the solidness, if that's a word, of ITCD Bacon, where, you know, there's a floor, there's a basement for how bad they can be. I feel like both Bizarre Gaming and Alpha Red are, the range of possibilities for them goes from very low to very high. And I want to see, and I think it has to do with them being, both of the teams being very young, like I mentioned earlier. But I really want to see their best games come out. And I think maybe them being on their home soil, also playing against each other, will help them regain that comfort. And perhaps they can maybe get an upset against J-Team if J-Team does beat TDC.
They will have that home crowd advantage, as I believe the quarterfinals honor played in front of a live crowd, so we'll see. On the other side of the bracket, it will be Team Flash flashing away against Flash Wolves in a match that is sure to be very fun to commentate, and I'm definitely never going to say those team names backwards.
Never, ever. Easiest cast of your life.
Flash Wolves heavily favored, right?
I think that this is a bad matchup for Team Flash, so in that sense, yeah, I would say yes.
You don't think it's because Team Flash are objectively worse? You think it's because this is a rough one-on-one match for them?
Yes. I think the way to beat Flash Wolves is exactly how AHQ played it. You do not let them fight you. I don't know if you noticed, but AHQ, when they played against Flash Wolf, they only took fights in which they were heavily favored, like a 3v1 or something like that, right? They did not let them fight them. And I feel like Team Flash will probably not know that, or probably not know how to execute the way that AHQ does, like freaking robots. If they let Flash Wolves fight them, Flash Wolves will kill them, because that's what Flash Wolves does. They're very, very good at micro. They're very, very good at killing you. Shishi will shut you down. He is ridiculous. And yeah, do not fight Flash Wolves, but I feel like Team Flash will fight them, and Flash Wolves will kill them.
AHQ versus Overclockers is, I hate to say it, but I feel like lambs to the slaughter.
Yeah. That is the most one-sided matchup in the quarterfinals.
Because Overclockers, like you said, have overperformed substantially to get here. They've looked very good while doing so. But I can't, in good conscience, give them a fighting chance against the best team in the world.
Right. And AHQ, let's mention here that they had a really tough group.
They looked so good through it all. AHQ have looked untouchable.
Yeah, it's just, the thing is, there's so many layers to AHQ, and there's so many things that they can do. Mm-hmm. They're able to pull off weird strategies that you have no preparation, that you can't even prepare for. Like just running around with a Fennec and taking down towers, and you can't really, they will refuse to fight you. And they'll run around with a Batman, and you think they're playing Batman, so therefore they need to snowball the game. Like, no, we're good. We're good with Batman just hanging around being a scout for us. And being like a second support, and we can take the game to the late game and slowly but surely burn down towers. And it's like, what are these strategies? What is going on? And then they play a normal game, and then, oh yeah, they're actually mechanically amazing too. So what the heck are you supposed to do? I think the only way to beat AHQ is to hope that they're off a little bit, which is what we saw in the GCS a couple times when they lost games in the regular season, and take them out when they're being a little bit too cute. But The thing about AHQ, when I talked about flipping switches with Bazaar and Alpharetta earlier, AHQ has already flipped the switch. They're in playoff mode. And when they're in playoff mode, they're really, really tough to beat.
I still have a memory that I hold on to of, and I've told this story before on the podcast, but it was that impressive. Me and Opal and Rip getting back from rehearsals at maybe 3, 4 a.m. Very, very early in the morning, the next day, AHQ have games to play that day, and they are in a room having a board meeting with a whiteboard, and their entire player roster sat down at the long hotel meeting table, mafia style, working out what they're going to do the next day. And then they showed up and they took names.
I like how, by the way, they have amazing preparation like that, but they aren't overly serious. There's not too much pressure on them to perform. Like, they're just kind of happy-go-lucky. They take it seriously, but it's not the end of the world if they lose. And I think that's the best way to approach something, whether it's esports or whether it's sports in general. Because we saw with OMG, their coach was constantly yelling at them. You saw they were yelling at each other.
I brought it up on the cast, and I felt a bit bad for it, because I don't like to speculate as to the mental state of players, but I couldn't help whenever they were winning games and they cut to the OMG desk, they were all just screaming at each other, and that is not a good place to be in.
Like, didn't they just win that game?
Yeah.
what's going on? But the last thing I want to say about AHQ is that they have the best of both worlds when it comes to both team play and individual superstars, right? Hawk looks amazing. He's looked amazing for a couple of months now. Sun has always been just the gravity master. It's so fitting with his name that his name is Sun, because he just draws the entire team over to his lane. And even if you kill him, the team is getting something done on the rest of the map. But that's where I feel like they have an advantage over a team like J-Team. J-Team just has great team play, but they don't really have individual stars, even though they have a player named Star. But it's either one or the other, right? Like, Flash Wolves has Shishi, who's an amazing player. They have other players who are great, but they don't have, like, the greatest team play other than amazing micro skills. And, again, it's usually one or the other, or, you know, some combination of both, but I feel like HQ has the full combination of both, where they have amazing team play, but also superstars on the roster.
So let's get into predictions then. I, like I said, do not see a world in which AHQ lose to Bizarre Gaming, AlphaRed, or J-Team in the Grand Finals. I see a world where Toyota Diamond Cobra reveal that they haven't hit their upper limit yet and fight AHQ close in the finals.
Honestly, considering how all of these teams have played so far, and seeing how, like, every single team needs to prove something, except for AHQ. Every team has dropped a game or dropped a series in a situation where they could have played better, except for AHQ. So, like you mentioned, I kind of agree on that front, where something needs to change, or else AHQ will be champions again.
Do you agree that TDC are the best vector for that change, or do you have your hopes pinned somewhere else?
TDC did lose to Team Flash. We should mention that again. So,
but not only did they look really classy while doing it, they're also the team that I feel is most likely to evolve from it, because, as you said, this is not the roster that played the regular season. This is a roster that has been scaling and growing. So if there is a team that can make adjustments lightning fast, it would be TDC. And that is why I think they're the team most likely to overcome somewhat lackluster group stage results.
As far as a team simply overcoming AHQ, I would probably agree. But I think statistically speaking, the most likely way that AHQ falls is if J-Team goes to the finals and AHQ has a slightly subpar performance. Because J-Team, on a scale of 1 to 10, J-Team's always a 9, right? The problem is AHQ can hit a 10 and beat them. But AHQ can also fall a little bit. And the series between AHQ and J-Team in the finals was actually extremely close, even though it was 4-2. J-Team just had a terrible throw in one of their games. Mm-hmm. But I feel like if J Team just hits their nine consistently and AHQ maybe has a couple bad drafts or games, which they're, you know, sometimes susceptible to do, I feel like that is statistically the highest chance that AHQ will fall, is if J Team just does their consistent thing and AHQ has a couple bad games.
We're in agreement then that the threat to AHQ will come out of that quarterfinal. Either TDC grow and earn their victory over J Team's consistent level 9 and prove that they can go even further beyond, or J Team show up and grind out a series of consistent games and perhaps outlast AHQ in a final.
Right. The last thing, I suppose maybe Flash Wolves could beat AHQ, but we already see AHQ 2-0 them, so I'm not holding on
hold
a
up.
Hope for that.
I'm checking my notes. That's not happening.
Yeah, AHQ just has Flash Wolves' number, it seems, right? But Flash Wolves, there's I just want to fight you. I just want to kill you. And she's like, I am so good at this hero. Let me just kill you. It's like, nope, sorry. I'm not fighting this time. Oh, no, there goes your tower. Yeah, you might want to check on that. I was like, I want to fight. No, your tower's dying. Go look. And then AHQ just wins the game. And Flash Wolves like, we didn't even play a game. What happened?
AHQ has this potential to... occasionally, and like you said, what makes it the most terrifying is it's one of like 8 different styles that they're the masters of and can pull out at any moment. But one of the styles they do incredibly well is this, it reminds me of playing with a laser pointer and a cat and just never giving the other team anything tangible to fight and misdirecting them whilst you run around the side and steal their cat food.
Like, I've been chasing this little red dot. What's happening? Yeah. Why is my base dead? The weirdest thing they do is they pick Batman and they don't go for a snowball victory.
Rush was so bad at Batman. Like, on paper, that was a
he loves Batman
performance.
He loves Batman, though. He always picks Batman. I don't know. It's got to be one of those like things with the team where they'll be in a game and like, I want to pick Batman. They're like, no, don't pick Batman. I want to pick Batman. It's like, okay, fine. We'll make it work.
I bet he likes Zack Snyder's Justice League. That's how that happened. Thank you very much for listening to this week's episode of Tower Dive. We will be resuming regular episodes after the AIC. Till then, I can't promise consistency, but we'll try and hit it. You can follow D2 on Twitter at D2HS. I myself am at EsportsTJ, and the podcast itself is at TowerDiveAOV. You can keep up with all of the AIC action the easiest way over at the Samurai Gamers page. You can go to sgaov.com for a hot link to the Samurai Gamers Arena of Valor wiki, featuring up-to-date news, build guides, and much, much more. You can also watch them live on YouTube or at twitch.tv/arenaofvalor when they go live at, what, 11 p.m. PST on average? I'm waking up for them, so you should too. Closing thoughts?
Tora.
Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy the official theme song of Vietnam's AIC Hopes. Sau vẫn tiếp nối vì đây là Việt Nam, 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 đây là Việt Nam. Đây là Việt Nam.